That morning, I remember the sound of me hitting his grill. The whole thing just was slow-mo. And I remember the sound of me going into his windshield because it flipped me up and broke a hole through his windshield. I still, to this day, remember the screech of his brakes and then the thud I made when I came to the asphalt below and I was knocked unconscious. When I regained consciousness, I was surrounded by EMTs, the state trooper. They called the state trooper in to pronounce me dead at the scene of the accident, because in New Mexico, that's the only official position that can do that.
Michael, thank you so much for being with us today. Welcome to the show.
Trevor, good to see you, brother. So I can't wait to sit down with a little breakfast with you, man. So what's for breakfast?
Let's break some bread.
Yeah.
Man, you know, I got my coffee. That's what I'm sipping on. I haven't had any food today, you know, just protein shake. Got a little coffee going on.
All right.
I don't know.
A little food is the protein shake. You get a little protein jolt shake, with your caffeine. That's good.
That's right.
We're rocking it. That's breakfast.
So first thing I want to know from you, Michael, I want to hear about your near-death cycling accident, because I've been in a motorcycle accident. So my question to you is, tell me about the accident, and were you like wearing a helmet or anything like that? Like, were you geared up, or did you just like go down, and what happened? Like, paint that picture for me.
Yeah, so if I didn't have a helmet, brother, we wouldn't be here today, because that thing got demolished. So I was out in New Mexico. I was out there for a company offsite meeting, you know, one of those things that we did back in the day. You know, fly out on Monday, you stay until Friday, people golf on Thursday, and then you head back home and you do a whole bunch of PowerPoint team building exercises and all that jazz. And I brought my bike out because I was training for a race, and I carved out this beautiful loop on the hotel property. We were north of Albuquerque, south of Santa Fe, and I was going to breathe in the New Mexican air and just like live it up and cross New Mexico off the states that I've ridden my bike. And on the fourth lap of that morning, I came around a bend and a Ford Explorer was heading right towards me, going about 40 miles an hour. So you, as a motorcyclist, you probably had your leathers on, right?
No, actually I was wearing, this was during the summer and I was 20 years old and I have no helmet, had my hat on backwards, t-shirt, jeans. Yeah, no one hit me though. I didn't get hit by an expedition. Like, that didn't happen. So tell me, keep going.
Yeah,
keep going.
So I had my helmet on and just a bunch of Lycra. That was basically it, which is, you know, you're virtually naked. Like, the Lycra is not giving you much protection. And that morning, I remember the sound of me hitting his grill. The whole thing just was slow-mo. And I remember the sound of me going into his windshield because it flipped me up and broke a hole through his windshield. I still, to this day, remember the screech of his brakes and then the thud I made when I came to the asphalt below and I was knocked unconscious. When I regained consciousness, I was surrounded by EMTs, the state trooper. They called the state trooper in to pronounce me dead at the scene of the accident, because in New Mexico, that's the only official position that can do that. Ambulance, fire, police, and a helicopter was coming. And they flew me to the University of New Mexico in Albuquerque, the only trauma one center in the state. And while I waited for the helicopter, I was lying there in the worst pain of my life. Like, a whole bunch was broken. And I couldn't believe this was happening, because I thought I was following the script that we're supposed to follow in order to be successful. And this was not part of the script. Like, somebody ordered a rewrite and didn't tell me. And all I knew was I had to stay awake. This was my thinking, that if I stayed awake, if I maintained my consciousness, I could control what was happening, which is really quite funny because I had no control. But no control. But I thought if I was present, if I could see what was going on, then I had some influence, which I didn't.
That wasn't me, Michael. That wasn't me. I'm like, give me the good stuff.
Yeah,
just hook me up.
Well, they gave me some good stuff, but I was going into shock. One of the big injuries was that the left femur shattered. And when the left femur shattered, it lacerated the femoral artery. So I was bleeding out in the middle of nowhere, New Mexico. So they flew me to Albuquerque. The first surgery took about 13 hours. I needed 36 units of blood product in order to stabilize my life. They sent me to the ICU. My wife came out. We were married 7 years. We'll be married 30 years here in a few months. We had two daughters. They were 3.5 at the time and 7 months old. And our whole world got turned upside down. When she arrived, I was still in the trauma center. I was still being operated on. And then she was like, I don't care who comes out of that room next. I want to know what the heck is happening with my husband. And the vascular surgeon came out and said, your husband's been in a very bad accident. We did the best we could. The next 72 hours are going to be critical. I went to the ICU for several days. They later told my wife, we're surprised. We don't know how your husband actually survived given the extent of his injuries. Had he been 10 years older or not healthy, he would have died before he got to the hospital. And then I came out of the ICU and learned about the accident. The driver had a revoked license. So I got pretty bitter pretty quickly because I was thinking this should not have happened. Again, it's not in the script, but it did. And then I really got worked up about my identity because I thought everything that I thought I was no longer. Like, how could I have a career? How could I be the dad I wanted to be, the husband I wanted to be? They predicted that I would walk with difficulty. I would never be on my bike again. That life was going to be pretty dang hard.
Did you go into like a spiral of victim mentality, or were you like me? Like, because I remember when I got in my motorcycle accident and when I came out alive, thank God I wasn't wearing a helmet or anything like that. I had internal bleeding in the head and I still don't have a sense of smell. So literally I can't smell a thing because I hit my head and it's gone. But anyway, but I remember having this like sense of extreme gratitude and gratefulness. Absolute, like everything was just different. My whole life was just different. Everything, the air tasted different. You know what I mean? Things looked different. I was just so grateful, and gratitude was at an all-time high. And I remember praying to God, telling him, please, please, please don't take that feeling away from me because it was so good. So good. And it's my own fault that I didn't keep practicing gratitude to that level. Anyways, my question to that is, it's easy for somebody to maybe go into like what you were talking about, into a victim mindset. Is that kind of what happened for you? Tell me what your mindset was like after that accident.
Yeah, the initial phases was that of a victim. I was like, this is so unfair. Now, if you had spoken to me, I would have put on a happy face. I would have been like, no, we got this. Like on the outside, but deep down inside, I was like, I'm the victim. This sucks. This should not have happened. I was pissed at God. I was like, because people would say, God was looking out for you. I'm like, I beg your pardon, because where I really needed God's like looking out was about 5 seconds before the truck hit me. And where was God in that moment? So I got pretty angry and negative and vengeful. And when I thought about the driver, it wasn't until a mentor said, hey, you know, Michael, everything is neutral in life until you label it. And at first, Trevor, I was like, what is this? Is this like some Yoda thing? You know, like Star Wars? He was like, everything's neutral until you label it. You've quickly labeled this as you're the victim and no one's going to fault you because look what happened. But he went on to say, listen, there's some space here. You can create a different label for this and maybe see yourself differently. And at that point, That's when I found.
Who said that? I want to know who was that guy? Who was that mentor that said that to you? Because that is such good. Like at first, I was trying to. I'm like, what does that mean?
Yeah,
everything's like neutral until you label it. But the way you just set it up makes total sense. Who was that mentor?
So that person was a guy named David Kolb. But then it comes from sort of in the spirit of a quote that's usually attributed to Viktor Frankl, that between stimulus and response, there's a space. And in that space is your freedom, you know, and that's where you can grow. And so we tend to have.
Y'all didn't know we were going to get deep.
We're going deep.
We're dropping mics in here. We're getting deep.
Deep on with breakfast, right? So that's when I started practicing gratitude because I didn't know anything about gratitude back then. And I was like, okay. And then eventually I labeled that day. Because I realized, oh, I get to choose my label. So I labeled the day of my accident my last bad day, which at first a lot of people would be like, what's that about? Is that like some of the positivity stuff and unicorns and rainbows and all that jazz? And for me, what it was, you know, coming into like mindfulness was an understanding that we live moments to moment to moment throughout our days. And we all have a variety of different experiences in those moments. Some are happy and joyous, and some are horrific, like my accident or getting a cancer diagnosis or other things that happen in life. So those moments are just simply a moment. And at times we give more fuel to that moment and it turns into a bad day. It's sort of consistent with the parable, first arrow, second arrow. So what I decided was if I have people in my life who I love and love me back, how can I call a full day a bad one? It's too binary. So my days since, I've had bad moments. I've had challenging moments. I've had moments where I've been pissed off and angry. I've been happy and joyous and all and everything in between. But when I get to the end of the day, if I have people who I love and they love me back, then there's no way I'm going to call that day as a full day a bad one because those people I have in my life can help me create a better tomorrow.
And that's so true. And I want to ask you, what are some things that you do? Because listen, when you get hit by an expedition or you get that diagnosis of cancer or whatever the case may be, life smacks you in the face, okay, which it often does. When life smacks you in the face and you go into that victim mentality, as I've been there myself, okay, I was a huge victim when I was a teenager, and that's why I almost destroyed my life. But how do you get out of that victim mentality besides just saying, okay, labeling it, gratitude? Like, what are some things? Because when you're in the thick of it, it's like a mountain in front of you and you get this overwhelmed feeling. What are some things that you would recommend to somebody to kind of like snap them out of it? Like, you almost need somebody to smack you a little bit. Like, I think that's what that guy did for you when he told you that. It was kind of like getting a little smack across the face. But what are some practical things someone could do to start shifting their mindset the other direction?
Yeah, great question, Trevor. And we need those people in our lives to, you know, give us a little bit of a push. So one thing I start with is understanding who's around you. So as a cyclist, I call like my squad my Peloton, right? So a lot of times we think of Peloton in this country as the spin bike, but a Peloton in its truest form is a group of cyclists in a bike race like the Tour de France.
Okay, I didn't know that. Yeah. That's where they got the name from.
And so that Peloton is a moving squad, a moving community, and they all need each other to go far and go fast. So one exercise I do.
Great name for the company. They did so good with that.
They did a pretty decent job. And so one of the things I do with folks is really try to break down who's in their Peloton, because You need people that can help you clarify things when it gets a little fuzzy. You need that person that's going to push you outside of your comfort zone. You need someone who will be there to comfort you or when you have a crisis, and someone who can celebrate with you, but really celebrate you and not try to take the limelight away from you. So this Peloton needs to be diverse. I also believe, and this is what I did, was small steps. When things get overwhelming, when the mountain looks so big and you think there's no way we're going to climb it, we really got to go back to small steps. So what I did in my rehab was, okay, small progress every day. So underscoring the notion of consistency and then frequency. So that type of small step that gives us some small wins, we can celebrate those small wins. That can help build momentum. So we have small steps over time, the practice of gratitude, knowing who's in your Peloton, and then the practice of mindfulness allows us to slow it down, because when things get really crazy, like in a competition, like if you're playing sports or as an entrepreneur or working in corporate life, the pace of life right now is so wicked fast. We, our heads on a swivel. We're reacting, not being thoughtful. So mindfulness can help us slow down, create that space of neutrality, so then we can be thoughtful about how we want to go forward. And
so that's your key. And I see the shirt behind you. Your pause, breathe, reflect, meditation, right? And you have an app for this too, by the way.
Yes, so I have an app.
For the audience.
Yeah.
Okay, so tell us about the app, because it is designed to like help people with busy lives to practice mindfulness. What are some techniques that the app does? And like paint that picture for the audience so that they can go grab that thing and put it to work.
Yeah, absolutely. So I discovered mindfulness during my recovery as a way, I went back to my upbringing in sports. So every time the game got fast, the coach would always say, you know, take a deep breath, slow down. The EMTs, when I regained consciousness at the accident scene, I asked them, how's my bike? And they're like, your bike's fine. It was not. And then they said, just try to breathe. So we know this in our lives that our breath is magical in terms of helping us amp up when we need to be amped up, and it can slow things down when we need it to slow down. And so I started doing these pause, breathe, reflect breaks, as I would call them, PBR for short, because I thought it was being clever, because a lot of people associate the acronym PBR with something else in this country. And I was like, all right, like, let's like do these. And it helped me slow the game down so I could approach my rehab in the smartest way possible. And that's allowed me to get out of the hospital and all that jazz. So the app is really designed for helping people weave mindfulness throughout their day, like sort of like sprinkles, if you will. So often we might have someone who does yoga or meditates in the morning, but they don't bring the practice, as they would say, off the mat and weave it into their day. Or a whole bunch of people, you know, maybe not here because it's the Breakfast with Champions, but in other walks of life, they say, I don't have time to wake up earlier, or I don't have time to meditate in the morning. And I'm like, perfect. If you don't have 10 minutes in the morning, I bet you have five times throughout the day where you have 2 minutes. So give me 10 minutes throughout the day. Because what happens in our day with all those moments, we'll have some high moments and low moments. And it can create a roller coaster effect. What I want to see for people is keeping them in their zone of success. And when you come back to your breath, when you come back to on the app, there's a ton of shorter practices. That's how we designed it. So 1 minute, 2 minute, 3 minute, there are longer practices, but if you have something happening at 2 p.m., maybe it's a big pitch or a big meeting, you can take a simple 1 minute, 2 minute practice just to center yourself. So then you can be really on your game for that meeting. And that's my philosophy, is that sprinkle effect throughout the day. So what it does is it minimizes the whole roller coaster high and low or yo-yo or whatever.
This is something that's very new, very new to me. I'm going to tell you right now, I have not done, you know, full transparency. I have not. This is the one area probably that I haven't really done anything is meditation, right? Because like for me, when I think of meditation, I think of like the hum and a hum and a hum, you know, like that's what I think of. I haven't really done that. So maybe give me, for someone who's like me, who has never done any meditation, you know, I've done the workouts and all of this other stuff and the getting up early and the, you know, the gratitude and goals and the morning five and all these crazy things that are really, really good for you, by the way. But I haven't done the meditation, but there's a lot of people out there that swear by it. And I know that it's probably something that I'm missing because my brain is like pop, 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 pop. And to have a quiet space to just be in my thoughts. Talk to me about it.
Yeah. So I built this app for you, brother.
Okay. Let's go.
I didn't build it for the hum and a hum and a hum.
Downloading it right now. Yeah, let's get it.
So like for some people, they have a meditation practice and it's quite spiritual and there is a little bit of that, you know, TM type of meditation. I built it for people who could really benefit from a mindfulness practice, but haven't yet tried it or haven't yet been successful being consistent with it. So what meditation can do or mindfulness can do is it can help you expand your awareness so you can see more things. It can help sharpen your focus, and then it can help you meet your moment at a sweet spot, that sweet spot where you are maximizing your potential. So let's take focus for an example. So as you sit, a lot of people think, well, in meditation, my mind has to go blank. No, that's not what's happening. What we're doing is we're paying attention to what's bubbling up in the mind, as an example. And so you might be focused in on your breath. That's the focus part. And then something pops up in your head, like, why does Becky have such great hair? Or that meeting you have.
Becky with the good hair.
Good hair. Or that 3 p.m. meeting you have. And all of a sudden you start thinking about that. So you notice that, and then you come back to your breath. So almost in the spirit of a bicep curl, right? So you got the weight here. You're focused on your breath. Something distracts you. Weight goes out. You notice. You bring it back to your breath. And that's a bicep curl. And that movement of I'm distracted and now I'm coming back to my breath is mindfulness. That's the practice. So what it's going to help you do is enhance your focus. So when you're really on something, you can stay on it.
That's so good because, you know, especially in today's day and age, I think people's attention span is getting shorter and shorter and shorter with all the apps and everything else. And, so it, you know, I think, we're with our minds, it's like, I imagine it like a car. Okay. And we're constantly putting it into like, you know, first gear and then putting it in reverse and then putting it into neutral, then putting it into, you know, third gear and just like jamming that stick around. And it's like, your mind's like, I don't know what to do right now. Cause it's just go, stop, stop, go, 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 go with the apps and everything. And, yeah, we're about to blow the transmission on this thing.
We are about to blow the transmission. Yeah. It's like the foundation is starting to crack. Right. And so if you build a great house, you got to lay down a strong foundation that's based on your values and the people that you have around you and your purpose. And I would say a fourth cornerstone is a mindfulness practice. It has a tremendous amount of like health benefits. Like,
well, that's what I was going to ask you. So I know like right now they're talking about, you know, the Alzheimer's and stuff like that, you know, because of all the technology. And again, like I was talking about, we're start stopping our brain so much that, like the Alzheimer's disease is getting, you know, worse. It's going to be a big, big, big issue.
Huge issue.
Huge issue. You know, so, you know, talk to me about the health benefits of this.
Yeah. So when you think about the diseases that we know of, Alzheimer's, cancer, some of the things you see on TV, rheumatoid arthritis and stuff, they're all diseases where there's an inflammation process. There's inflammation in the body that's unhealthy. And so when that's chronic, then the body's not going to really dig that. And therefore, you know, disease comes downstream. So what mindfulness can do, and it's not a cure for like Alzheimer's disease, but it has a lot of health benefits in terms of like lowering our blood pressure. It can help with other mental health concerns and disease states, just as well as medication can. So what it does is it can help slow things down so we can give the body a break and maybe reduce some of that inflammation that's naturally occurring when we're like going through life like a TikTok scroll, right? And so there's some really great health benefits. And the thing that is big for me in 2024 is really helping people understand that, you know, mindfulness isn't this like soft thing and you're going to like zone out and chill out. Because a lot of folks who like want to get stuff done, they're like, well, if I do mindfulness, I'm going to lose my edge. And my notion to that or my advice or counter is actually it's going to help sharpen your edge. You'll perform better because doing a practice of mindfulness isn't easy. It's hard, but you know, it's going to really sharpen your focus, expand your awareness, and then that sweet spot, all that stuff, those are things that are going to help you perform better.
So maybe I am doing this. Is this why ice baths are so good? Because the ice bath, you know, you have deep breath work. Okay. When you get in there, man, I tell you what, you can't really think about a damn thing. Like your mind just goes into like survival. You're not thinking about all, you just kind of, I like it. And I actually have one. I built an ice bath at my house and it just kind of like helps you. And it's only, I get in there for 10 minutes.
10 minutes. So you are doing like a breath work pattern, which can be really beneficial because what you're doing is like, you're breathing in, you're breathing out slowly. And that slowly breathing out is an indication to your body and brain, like, hey, we're good here. I know the brain's like, what the heck is happening? You just dump yourself into 45 degree water, or however cold you set it at. So the body is naturally going to go into a fight flight mode. And with your breath, Trevor, you're saying, we're going to slow that breath out, that the exhale out, say, hey, body, we're good here. I'm doing this on purpose. And so you're doing a breath work pattern that can be really great for your health. And then I would say, and it's good to have little short practices throughout the day that will complement the ice bath you do in the morning. Because if you just do the ice bath in the morning and you're like, check the box, I'm good, it can be transactional. And what we want is a practice to be transformational for you. So we weave that practice in without getting in the ice bath. And that my app has a lot of different breathwork patterns to help you do just that, to say, okay, I'm just going to do a little 2 minutes here, 3 minutes of a breathwork pattern, like box breathing. And now I'm dialed in for, you know, my next breakfast with champions or whatever event you have coming up. Or we talked before we went live about how you want to speak more like public. Perfect to use the app to drop in, slow things down so you can deliver the talk that you want to deliver.
I love that, you know, and I probably should have got this app before I bought that ice bath, because let me tell you something, anybody that ice baths out there, y'all know those things suck. Okay, they're amazing. I love them. I love it, but it's like, oh, it does not get any easier. Like, it is absolute torture every single time I do it. It just doesn't get any easier, and I don't look forward to it. I'm not excited about it. I'm like, oh, this is gonna suck.
But you're doing it.
You do it anyway.
But the thing is, if you can do that, if you have the discipline to do that, then you have the discipline to have a mindfulness practice. And, you know, it's just a little, you know, some sprinkles throughout the day. That's what you need. And then at night we do a little gratitude practice, and then
like a notification pop up that says like, "Hey, it's time."
Yeah, otherwise... it's a little chap on the shoulder I give you. It's like, "Hey, Trevor, would you like to take a moment to, you know, come back to your breath?" And so I do.
I'll give you an example. I need that because here's the deal. Like, I've got this stand-up desk right here. Okay, this thing is a stand-up desk, and underneath I have like a treadmill, okay, underneath this thing, and like, but I don't ever have anything reminding me, you know what I mean, to like, hey, do your thing, you know, get your treadmill out and walk, you know what I mean? Because, and then I'll just end up sitting here for, you know, all day long, and that's not good for you. Like, I think that's another thing that's like killing people is they say it's worse than smoking, is just sitting all dang day long.
Sitting all day.
So anyway, yeah. That's another issue.
But the cool thing is like you can go for a walk, and that can be a mindfulness practice. You can go for a mindful walk. And for me, what I do is like every half an hour, I try to like move a little bit. And I might take a minute where I pause, breathe, reflect, especially if I'm switching tasks. Like if I'm going from one meeting or just sitting down with you, and then the next thing I have is something maybe completely different, I'll be like, okay, I just need a minute to cleanse the palate, you know, cleanse the brain so I can focus on what's up next. And that's what I want to bring to people, is like welcome them into a mindfulness practice. I believe folks can do it. And if we take small steps, we have a great community. And I would just imagine if there are 8 billion people on this big blue marble that we all share, if 8 billion people, or let's just say 7 billion, we'll leave some room to grow. 7 billion people took 1 minute every day to pause, come back to their breath, and just have a moment of reflection. And in that moment of reflection, they express something that they're grateful for or decided how they wanted to show up in the world. We would have a much more peaceful world, and we would be getting more stuff done, not only to help this generation, but future ones.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we got all these wars and stuff going on right now. Everybody needs to chill out and meditate. Okay, come on now. That's what I did. Everybody just needs to, you know, we need to think about what we're grateful for. Just chillax a little bit. Okay, so I've got another question for you. Okay, so about mindfulness and emotional intelligence. Okay, so these are often linked to effective leadership. Right. So how do these qualities impact leadership, and how can they be leveraged to foster positive and inclusive organizational culture? Because I know that's what you speak about a lot. So talk to me about the, leadership.
Sure. So with emotional intelligence, one part of it is understanding or enhancing our overall emotional knowledge, like what things trigger us. When we get triggered, how do we manage that? Understanding like what we're feeling and why we're feeling it, you know, like what's that about, if you will. The other part of emotional intelligence is how we react to other people, relationship management, just tapping into others, going back to community. And when we look at work, we ain't doing this by ourselves. We need people around us. So it's understanding oneself and understanding how to connect with other people to make emotional intelligence like a short little class on it. What mindfulness allows us to do is we get to understand ourselves better with the practice. What are we feeling? What do we sense? What's triggering us? Why is that so? And with some of the mindfulness practices, like a loving kindness practice, we can start to slow things down, and we begin to hear and see and appreciate others better. And we can also appreciate that my experience and how I show up is influenced by my lived experience, and how you show up, Trevor, is influenced by your experience growing up. And so now we have an appreciation that we're all coming at it with different perspectives. And then that can soften this animation and conflict that we see a lot of times in work cultures, and we can get to a better place with collaboration and communication. So my feeling is this: if there are belonging efforts or diversity, equity, inclusion efforts going on at companies out there, and they don't have a dedicated aspect of the program on mindfulness, then they're not doing it as complete as they can. Mindfulness really allows us to understand ourselves better, so then we can connect with others better. And that's what we need for good culture, especially now. Like, since we're all over the place, you know, we're hybrid, we're in the office, we're on Zoom, we're on Teams. We have to find a way to come together, slow it down a bit to say, okay, you know what, Trevor, I see you. I hear you. I appreciate you. Now let's have a conversation about what we need to get done.
You know, that's so interesting you're talking about that, because, you know, one of the things that I feel like is one of my superpowers is the fact that I grew up with so many different types of folks. Okay. My mom's house was kind of like a homeless shelter, and we had all kinds of different backgrounds and ethnicities and all kinds of stuff. And so it allowed me to be able to really communicate with a lot of different types of people and get along with all types of people and see the good in people, and also understand that, hey, we're all flawed. We're all sinners at the end of the day. But where I'm going with this is that my experience, what you said was our experiences in life, you know, shape how we show up and things like that. And so my experience, I understand, is not everybody else's. And so the fact that I can communicate and have conversations and be able to go into different spaces and be as fluid and almost be like a chameleon in some ways, you know, and adapt to my environments, I understand that not everybody has that. And that's why I think it's a gift for me, but not everybody has that. And so when we have these initiatives, these corporate initiatives, diversity, equity, and inclusion, where we're putting people together from all kinds of different backgrounds who maybe they haven't had the same experiences, where they haven't been able to communicate with, you know, or haven't had to talk to all these different types of people, I understand it can be very, very challenging. And so what you're saying is to take this mindfulness to really reflect on that, right? Because as where I see it as a strength of mine, other people may not have that, right? And I guess that goes into your emotional intelligence to understand that, like, hey, you know, maybe you didn't have that type of a upbringing, and you're not as I don't know, you're not as fluid, I guess. And does that make sense?
Total sense. You know, like just what you said, like how you grew up, much different than how I grew up. So, you know, we're on Clubhouse, we're on other platforms. So if people can't see an image of us, we're both white dudes. But we have two different upbringings in different parts of the country. And so it would be sort of a no-brainer to say, well, we might see the world differently. We might look similarly, but we may see the world completely differently. And that's the case for all of us. And so if we slow it down just a bit, I'm not telling anyone to stop, because we have, you know, I generally talk to people who are like type A personalities and want to get stuff done. I'm just saying, pump the brakes a bit and see that your story is in the person across from you's story, and their story is in your story, that we have so much more in common. And if we only view ourselves through one lens, whatever that lens is, we don't have a complete picture of that person. So how do we, sort of in a term that a photographer would use, open our aperture? This is the awareness piece, and see that we are a collection of stories and experiences. And maybe then we say, oh, wow, you know what? We got something in common. And it says one little thing, and then we're going to start there, and then we're going to start to develop some trust. And then with that trust, a little safety. And now maybe we can have a harder conversation. But if we only see ourselves through that one lens, we will continue to be divided. We will not come together. And we'll keep on spinning like we're always spinning, expecting the results to be a lot different. And that ain't going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and that's such a great point. And then, you know, another thing that I think really helped me was selling cars. I sold cars for a few years. And so then it's for like 6 years. And, you know, you start to, you know, you have to talk with all kinds of different types
Types of people. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Sales will do that.
So I think, I think my upbringing helped allow me to be really good in that role. Right. And excel in that role because I had to be a people person, regardless of what they look like, what their background is, all of that. Like at the end of the day, the job was to sell the car. And so if they don't like you, they're not going to buy it. So you had to get in there and talk to people and be human. And, yeah, you had to be human, and that's the end of the day. We're all human. So, but I love what you're talking about. It's important to reflect and understand where you come from, what your experiences are, and understand that we're not all the same, but we have a lot of commonalities, right? We have more in common than we have that separate us, and we should embrace our differences. Man, I think it's like I don't want everybody to be like me. You know what I'm saying? There's only one me. You know what I mean? I don't want everybody to be like me. I love the fact that we have different perspectives, different viewpoints. And I love that this room is a great space for that, right? It always has been. The Breakfast with Champions in Clubhouse room has always been a very, very diverse group, a lot of different perspectives, and very inclusive of that, which is cool. All right, I want to shift gears just a little bit. While we still have some time, I got a few more questions for you. So in today's, you know, we talked about how fast paced this world is, right? Everything's moving, constantly changing, right? Change is inevitable, right? So how can people build resilience, especially when facing unexpected changes or challenges? Like we, you know, we had a few years ago, we had COVID that came out of nowhere, right? But how do people build resilience through that?
Well, I think first, we're born with resilience. Like we have this innate desire to live for the most part when we're born. And you can just look at like a baby learning how to walk, right? He or she falls down and they get back up again. They keep falling down, they keep coming back up. So they're not taught, we don't teach the baby resilience. It's in them. It's within all of us. And with all the stuff happening in our lives, we tend to forget that we have resilience deep within us, in our cells, in our being, in our body. So we have,
is it something like a muscle though? Like just like you were talking about otherwise, cause I see there's some weak people out there. Okay. There's some weak people out there. And I was talking about this the other day. I was like, man, if these people got dropped off in the middle of the woods somewhere, they would not survive.
They might not come out.
They would roll over and die. Okay.
They might not come out.
And then there's some people that you see that like rise to the challenge and make it out. And they're going to eat the bugs. They're going to figure out how to freaking survive, you know, like that resilience. So is it a muscle or how do people, like you said, we're born with it, but is it a use it or lose it type of a deal?
So to your point, Trevor, I think it is a muscle. And so if we don't use it, it atrophies, we lose it. So one way to develop it is we try to get outside of our comfort zone. We hear that all the time, right? Get outside of our comfort zone. Stretch for something that's going to make us sweat a little bit, that makes us nervous. We may not be successful. We'll fall down. So that's how we exercise the muscle. Sometimes we hit the mark. Sometimes we don't. But we find a way to get back up again. Another way of doing it is like surrounding ourselves with those good people who bring out the best in us, because when we trip and fall, we might need a hand to pull us back up. When we trip and fall and then get back up again, we've hopefully learned something. So there's got to be some way to absorb the learning so we don't trip and fall in the same way again. So there's a whole bunch of different ways we can develop resilience. And here's a big thing is, in 2024, the one thing we should all expect is that the unexpected will happen. Going back to my accident, part of the shock, the initial shock was this was not supposed to happen. This wasn't part of the plan. So we set up in 2024, we have our word of the year, we've framed everything out, and we think everything's going to run just as smoothly as we plan it to be. But the reality is, things will happen outside of our control. So we should not be all anxious about it, but this belief that I can go with the flow. Like when the unexpected happens, I know within me and the people around me, we can figure this out. And having that mindset allows us to stay resilient. So when we started 2020, no one was talking about the pandemic. So this year we got things happening on the world stage. We have things happening here in the US. AI will accelerate. It'll get harder to figure out what's real and what's not. A whole bunch will happen. So let's expect that it'll happen. So then when it happens, we're like, all right, hey, I was expecting that. Now I know I can handle it because I can handle a lot. I can do hard things. I've got this. And together, we can also figure this out. So that's a big part of the mindset approach as we go into uncertainty and instability and just the world that we live in.
I love that. I love that. In the words of Ross, I guess I think it's Ross Geller from Friends. He says, pivot.
Pivot. Yeah.
Pivot. Yeah. You got to pivot, man. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Quit worrying about all this stuff. I mean, I get it. You know, when life's crashing down, it's easy to get into the worry mentality and the oh, woe is me. Just try not to stay there too long. It's okay. It's a natural human feeling, worry and stress and anxiety. Those are all natural, you know, feelings. But I think maybe to your point, mindfulness, right? Understand, hey, oh, I'm having those feelings. Where's this rooted? Wait, do I have any control over this? Oh, no, I don't. So why am I worried about this? Okay, cool. Put that down, put the worry down, put the stress down for just a moment. Now, what do I have control over? What are the things that I can do right now that can put me in a better position, right? The things that I can do right this second. And there's always, we always have a bunch of things that we can do. And so mindfulness, right? When you get into a position where you're just worried and stressed out, you know, what is it that you're really worried about? Now, if you're worried and stressed and you have control over it, then go take care of it. Get it done.
Yeah. Understanding what we have control of and what we don't have control of. That's a key thing. And that can be part of the reflective pause, breathe, reflect. Just understanding that is a huge step.
Huge.
And then
huge, because otherwise you're just taking all this energy. You know how much energy it exhausts when you're worried and stressed and anxiety? Like this,
I think it's one of the reasons why we're so tired.
Because
we got all this going on and we're not handling it in a healthy way. A lot of times we'll ignore it. We try to fight it. We try to numb it. And what, you know, we're talking about today is let's find a different way of handling it that's healthier, that gives us some space so we can be more thoughtful. Life's short. So let's make sure we're maximizing all of our moments as we live this precious gift that we all have been given.
Amen to that. And speaking of maximizing all of this, I want to talk about a couple of programs you got coming up. You have a new coaching program. Okay. So I want to give a plug there. What, tell us what we can expect in this coaching program. And then you also have some speaking you're going to be doing this year, some corporate speaking. So let us know a little bit about that. And if there are any doors we could help to open for you, this is the Who You Know show. That's what it's all about. So I want to help to open some doors for you as well. So again, tell us about the coaching program and some of these speaking engagements you're looking for.
Well, I appreciate that, Trevor. So the coaching program, it's something I had in the, like before the pandemic. I hit pause during the pandemic for a variety of different reasons. We're bringing it back, version 2.0. It's called the Inner Circle. It's a community of like-hearted humans. So often we hear about, I want to be with like-minded humans. And I think, I understand why people say that, but I also think if we just always hang out with people who think the way we do, it gets us in trouble. So this is about like-heartedness coming from a good place in our heart, open to different mind, different perspectives, different mindedness. And so it's all around bringing together my years of corporate executive experience, lessons from my last bad day, my recovery, and also guidance as a meditation teacher, bring it all together in one holistic program where we meet monthly in a group setting to help people maximize their definition of success. And so it's going to be a really cool program. I can't wait to bring it back. And yeah, as we were talking before we hit record, you know, I think both of us, you know, going through the pandemic, we went digital. I was a little slow to get back into being out there speaking in public. So what companies used to hire me for was talking about change and resilience and community and all that jazz before the pandemic hit. And we did a lot of virtual. But with my bike ride across the country and some other really awesome projects, I didn't get back out into speaking in 2023. But this year, I've cleared my calendar to get out in person more and do more talks for companies to help their employees really like step into this moment and find a way to become more resilient and be mindful and build really great culture so we can get some stuff done. So I can't wait to do that this year.
Well, I'm excited for you. My journey is a little bit similar in that way as well. You know, the pandemic, world shut down, everything like that. We pivoted online. Pre-pandemic, we did a lot of events, a lot of in-person stuff. And, you know, this is where I was telling you before we hit record, like I did the pivot online, but I didn't pivot back. And that was my own mistake. I've lost some time. But it's all good. Live and learn. I didn't pivot back. And so I'm seeing now, okay, well, you know what? It's time. It's time to get back. I've been going to events, but I haven't had my own events. So anyways, it's time to open things back up. And I'm excited for that. I'm excited for this year speaking and getting out and about and shaking some hands, kissing some babies, all that you good bet. Stuff. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. You and me both. So I can't wait for what 2024 will bring. I'm super stoked for it. And I can't wait to put a really cool ripple into the world.
Absolutely. Let's go. And you know what? Because, you know, I can't remember the stat they said, but they said something about like it takes so much more time or energy or something like that for the virtual to build trust and connection than it does in person. Like you can expedite the, the relationship building in person just like light years faster than the online. So I'm excited about that because I'm all about building relationships and connections and figuring out how, like you said, the ripple effect, how can you impact the world? And if I can do that, you know, faster, right? And with more impact, and then why the heck not? So let's go. Let's do this. Michael, where can the audience connect with you? What's the best way for them to reach you and where can they connect with you?
Well, they can go to michaelobrienshift.com. That will take them to Pause, Breathe, Reflect, all the social channels. I hang out on Instagram at Pause, Breathe, Reflect, and then LinkedIn. They can find the app in the App Store or Google Play, and we can start there and then we can see how the conversation unfolds.
Y'all make sure you go pick up that app. Okay, I'm going to pick it up. Okay, I'm going to download it because I need it. Okay, and so do you. You need it too. Trust me, we all need it. So absolutely. And make sure you do me a huge favor, okay? When you download that app, okay, I want everybody in the audience to download that app. And I want you to rate it. Okay, I want you to give it a 5-star rating. Don't give them no 1-stars, okay? None of this 2 stars or 3 stars. If it's less than 5, it's failing, okay? So I want you to do me a favor. Hook Brian up, or Michael here, up. He spent his time with us today. And I want you to go ahead and rate it 5 stars. Take a screenshot of that review. Send it to me. Okay. I want you to send it to me at Trevor@whoyouknow.show. Trevor@whoyouknow.show. And if you do that, I got something a little special for you. Okay. So make sure you do that. I would love it, love it, love it to see a whole bunch of those screenshots come through of those 5-star reviews. Thank you so much. Michael, I appreciate you being here with us today. Hang tight with me. We're going to go to the Clubhouse audience to do some live Q&A, but want to give a special shout out to those online watching us. We appreciate you. We love you, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Who You Know Show podcast. My name is Trevor Houston, and if you've enjoyed this episode, consider subscribing wherever you listen and leave us a positive review to help us keep the mics on in the studio. Until next week, that's the show. It's all about who you know.